This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Thursday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Mary Kitzmiller from Kemp, Texas, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for January 12th, episode 1608. Today's show is brought to you by Horseware. Good morning, Horse World.
What is your favorite day of the week?
You never stop learning. You never stop understanding. It's more in depth than just riding a horse. Knowing that for the rest of my life I could work on this and I'll never stop learning.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us on this Thursday morning in January. And I know some of you are preparing to have a major ice storm in the middle of the country and possibly over even to where we used to live in Kentucky. And can I just say that I'm glad I'm not there. So just throw that out there right now. But we are thinking about you. And if you need to get out, Florida and Texas are nice and toasty. Just saying. Right, Mary? Nice and toasty.
Yes, although we also have very sideways wind right now, but it's warm wind, so there's that.
Oh, yeah. There you go. As long as it's warm, you're fine. I mean, things don't blow over in warm wind, right?
Yeah.
All right, we are here. Mary, of course, is here. She is here the second Thursday of every month and does a little training Q&A and has guests, and we just have a little fun with it, and of course, brought to you by Horseware. Well, now, Mary, last month we made a big announcement, and this month we have to rescind it, so you're going to have to explain to your loyal fans what's going on.
Okay, well, after a lot of careful consideration and sanity checks, I have decided to push back my Mongol Derby adventure to next year. So I'm not giving up. I definitely want to do it. But when it came to logistics and everything, I thought, you know, I can't give this 100% this year like I thought I could. And they were very understanding. So I'm not going to be doing it this year. I feel really bad. I'm bailing on Leslie. I'm sure she'll be fine, but yeah. So I will be going next year. She can pave the way for me, and that way it's much easier.
You and Wendy both bailed on Leslie. So when I told her the other day, I was like, Leslie, I got out of this one. She said, I'm alone again.
I'm there in spirit.
One thing about Leslie is she makes friends very quickly, so that's not going to be a problem for Leslie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Whoever has alcohol over there, she'll be right there. She'll be fine.
Oh, man, we would have been great together then.
Yeah, so that's what she'll be looking for. She'll be looking for the people over there who are carrying flasks, and that's who she'll hang out with.
I was planning on bringing Fireball.
I know. I wasn't sure you were going to fit the boxed Fireball into your backpack, but
well, have you seen the flask? In fact, she may need. I may need to send her one of these. We made a flask with my new laser engraver, and on the front of it, it's engraved with the blood of my enemies.
Oh, she needs that,
right?
Yes, she does. She needs that for her trip. We'll have to definitely send her one of those.
Yes.
Well, yes. I was disappointed. What's that, Jennifer? Oh, you're breaking up on us. Jennifer, you're breaking up on us real bad.
No.
Let's see if that comes back. We've been having that kind of morning, everybody, so we're warning you. If we go off the air, we tried.
At least it's not me this time.
No, yet. You've been fine. It's on our end that all the problems are. I don't know what's going on, to be honest. Well, so that was the big news, is that Mary's not going to be in the Mongol Derby this year. I think you just thought about how much training and exercise it was going to be. And you also read all the comments from Jerry and the other auditors who were saying you were going to have to give up Cheetos. And that was why you quit.
No.
No? I mean, wasn't it Cheetos?
I was explaining to the race to my farrier yesterday, and I was like, yeah, and you go and you ride 600 miles and the horses aren't really broke. Oh yeah. And you kind of have to worry about half wolf, rabid dogs and bandits. Oh, and you have to go there a few days early, so you get the crippling diarrhea ahead of time. And then I'm thinking, huh, this sounds pretty extreme.
I'm glad they were good about it. I wasn't sure how they'd be about it. But then the other thing that happened with you and Wendy is you guys like signed up so late that you needed to come up with $5,000 tomorrow, you know, and it was that was going to be interesting too.
Yeah. Okay. And, you know, I could have made it work, but, you know, it just didn't seem fair to take out when I could be using it to, you know, do ranch improvements and that kind of thing. And so having that extra time to, you know, make sure finances are all properly in order and be responsible about it is going to be a huge relief as well.
See, that's the hard part is being a responsible adult. You know, that's just so hard. Why is it so hard?
I know.
Plus, you have another new thing going on, too, that we have to mention, but I'm going to get to that in just a minute. First, I have to do this.
Happy birthday! Happy birthday! Happy, happy birthday to you!
I have to give two people happy birthdays, and they're both hosts on the Horse Radio Network. Reese Coffler Stanfield's birthday is today down there in Wellington, of course, host of the Dressage Radio Show. And your birthday, Mary, in 2 days. So happy birthday. Oh, and we lost Mary.
Thank you.
Are you there?
There she is.
Am I back? Hello?
Yeah, we were...
I just fainted because I realized how old I was going to be.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
But happy birthday. So I wanted to make sure we did that and didn't forget. But you put a post on the auditor page last night. You said, hey, friends, I need your help. A friend and I are partnering on selling quality performance pleasure horses, and I'm working on Facebook pages, and I need a catchy title, something simple, memorable, descriptive. Any ideas? And, of course, the auditors came through with some very interesting names for your sales page.
Very creative, if nothing else.
I'm not sure it was exactly what you were looking for. Some of them, some of them were a little dirty sounding. Some of them were like Pony Up for Life. That was one of the more normal ones, actually. I liked, there were a couple I really liked, All the Pretty Ponies, but I'm not sure that describes a sales page. That was
right.
Cute,
like if I was having 12-year-olds train up Shetland ponies, then yeah, that would be good.
How about Horses Done Right? I like that one. Or Done Right Horse Sales.
Yeah, that one's pretty good. That one's pretty good. Not too bad.
Yeah. How about Prancing Pony Performance Horses?
I like that one because
it sounds like a dance troupe.
It does.
Well, yeah. It's a Lord of the Rings tie-in though, so you get that.
You do have that going for you, too. Yeah, that's true.
I don't know if everyone would pick up on that.
How about the Time is Right Performance Horses?
Yeah, not bad. Not bad.
That was pretty good. Kind of ordinary, but pretty good. I think how about Eclectic Equines? I'm not sure.
You know, I kind of like that one because it sort of goes with what I have in my pasture right now.
You do have an eclectic group, and I think that's where that came from. How about Mixed Bag of Nuts Equine Sales?
Yes, descriptive. Maybe not the best for sales. I like the one in that same comment, Box of Chocolates. And I was thinking, Box of Chocolates? Oh, because you never know what you're going to get.
There's a movie reference.
For sale horses.
Spur of the moment performance horses. I kind of like spur of the moment performance horses. That was pretty cute.
Yeah, that one's a good one
because that has like all kinds of double meanings, right? I think the need for steed could be misinterpreted myself.
Because I liked that one. I was like, oh, that one's top five for sure.
It could be misinterpreted. Just saying.
well, that also kind of has the, you know, Well, I don't want a fast horse.
Well, it also has a breeding reference. So I'm just saying.
Yeah. I've now picked up on the innuendo. Yes,
how about pinball ponies? See, I don't think that's really where you're going. You're going for more trained horses, right? Not really.
Yes. Yeah. There was some confusion on the term performance horses. I think that's used more in the Western end. And so I got like something like Dust Devils or pinball. Yes. I'm like, well, they're supposed to be gentle. And the reply I got was like, well, I thought it was performance horses. I'm like, yeah, they can be both. You can have a performance horse that doesn't buck you off every day or dart around the arena like a pinball.
Have you seen some of the eventing horses?
Well,
I like this one. And this one's somebody that listens to your episode all the time. You can tell because the name of the page would be Trained by Cheetos. And I just thought, or Kitzmiller Crafted. I thought those.
And I would use that one if Frito-Lay wouldn't see my pants off.
Homespun horses. That was pretty good.
Yeah. Cute.
Straight Arrow Equine, except there's the Straight Arrow line of products, and they might sue you, so they might want and they all, everybody that knows what kind of old movie fan you are, wrote Rat Pack Performance Horses, kind of a reference to the old days.
I think Baby Goat gets to be Frank Sinatra in that Rat Pack.
Oh, that's perfect, actually.
Because he does it his way.
And Jamie mentioned yesterday on the show, here I'm off on a side tangent, Sweet Ride Performance Horses was another one that I thought was...
I like that one.
That was cute, too. So have you decided on a name before I get off my tangent?
No, you know, naming things is the hardest thing in the world for me. It should be simple. But I just get stuck on it. So, no, it'll probably take me a lot more agonizing, you know, soul searching before I come up with a name.
It took her 3 months to name her horse.
That's true.
Yeah.
So this could take 6 months.
That's true. Yeah. The longer it takes you to name it, the longer it'll take you to sell anything. I'm just saying.
Exactly. Yeah,
so
yes,
might want to consider that little piece of information. But one thing too, yesterday Jamie brought up on the show, and she brought you up, and I saw it posted 100 times on your Facebook page. So I will give you the opportunity to tell everybody that you know about it, and you don't need it posted anymore. And that's goat yoga.
Oh my god! Yeah. I am cursed to be tagged in everything remotely related to goat for the rest of my life. And goat yoga, like if you go, I went to my timeline one day, this was before goat yoga exploded, and it was like goat video, goat video, goat video, goat video. I'm like, man, I didn't think I talked about the goat that much. but everyone's like, Mary Catherine, a new business plan for you, goat yoga. And I'm like, A, I'm not bendy enough for yoga. And B, as much as I love my goat and farm animals, I don't want to do yoga amongst piles of turds I have to avoid.
I know. The whole goat yoga thing. Those are people who have never been around animals.
It's Oregon, people. Yeah, it's Oregon. That's all I need to say. Well, and my goat is very heavy at the moment. I think he's close to 300 pounds. And I could see me laying on the ground, stretched out, and he just hops on my stomach and kills me. And, you know, he's not a...
Hey, he's a boer goat, isn't he?
He is. He is.
Well, he's and supposed everyone, to be fat. He's a meat goat.
You know, it's funny because... I had some guys working on my ranch, and we had some electricians out to bury some cables, and they had dug these really deep ditches that were only like 4 to 6 inches wide, and he somehow managed to get stuck in a ditch, and like his legs went down in it. Yeah. And he's stuck, and he just gives up. Like he just sits there like, I'm dead. And you know, one of the guys was like, you're supposed to be a goat and agile and stuff. I'm like, no, he's a meat goat. They're supposed to be pretty easy to kill and eat. And I tell you what, if I was, you know, if I was so inclined, I bet he would be good at eating. He's been fattened up with Cheetos. I mean, I think it'd be delicious.
Cheeseburgers and Cheetos, every goat's favorite. You know, from this point on, you're going to be known as the crazy goat lady. You know that, right?
Right. Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah. But she has seen goat yoga, so you don't need to post that on her page anymore. I'll help you out. Okay.
Yes. Like, yes. Ha ha ha. Welcome. Funny goat yoga. Never heard of it. But I do. Okay. On the other hand, I really appreciate that you guys think of me and you want to share something cool and funny. Just 900 times in a row is a little bit much. My eyes twitching just a little bit.
Training tip. What do we got this month? Oh, by the way, we should get to Jennifer to tell us what is coming up in today's show now that we're halfway over.
You mean besides goat training and goat recipes? Besides that.
Which is relevant, yeah.
Besides that, coming up on today's Mary Kitzmiller training episode brought to you by Horseware. We're going to talk about vocal cues in training. Is it really good to talk to your horse? And then next up, Shauna Koresh is going to stop by, woohoo, and talk a little bit about more positive reinforcement training. And then after the break, of course, it's Q&A time, and Mary is going to answer your listener questions. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Hey, before we get to your training tip, I have important things to discuss first. And I'm sorry, everybody, but Mary and I get to talk once a month. So this is our chance to get caught up. Did you see Stan Lee's cutting back his appearances? He's not going to be at every Comic-Con across the country anymore. He's 94 years old, and he said he can't travel too much anymore. It's getting very hard to travel, so he's making one last final appearance in Salt Lake City, and then at a Comic-Con out there, or it's called FanX, and he's going to be going to that one. But he is dramatically reducing because he's almost 95. So I just thought I would let everybody know that an era is ending. Now, I'm sure he'll still be in the movies because they probably come to his house and film it with a green screen, right?
Yes.
What? It would not be a Marvel movie without sitting there the whole way through trying to spot Stan Lee's 3 seconds on the screen.
We saw a special about him the other day. He was an amazing character. I mean, he did everything back in the day. He really did. And of course, you know, it's always fun. That's the thing, watching a Marvel movie is finding Stan Lee in it. You wait for that moment. Everybody cheers in the theater when he comes on. So,
they're uninformed in the theaters I go to. Like, did you know where I go? Oh. No one exists of a Marvel movie. I'm the only one left.
Do you mean nobody sees Marvel movies where you live?
No, they see them. But they don't understand.
Oh, stay for the credits. You broke up a little for me there.
You have to sit through... My Norton antivirus decided it wants to update.
Yeah, you're going to want to turn that off. You're breaking up for us.
Okay. Hold on. I'm trying to figure out.
People,
tell Norton to take a break.
Yeah, tell Norton to go away. But yeah,
is it any better?
Yeah, it's a little bit better now. That's what happens at the end of those movies. We all hang around, and then everybody else leaves, and you go, the good stuff's coming.
Yeah. You know, other than the Mongol Derby,
and there aren't Easter eggs.
Well, and
everybody
should
have those.
Exactly. Other than the Mongol Derby, another bucket list is I want to go to a Comic-Con. I've never been to one. But at the same time, I get really stressed out by lines and stuff and not being able to get into something. So I don't know. It might be too stressful.
No OCD for you? Just kidding. Let's talk about your training tip.
Okay. So this idea came to me on the fly. Someone in the Otters group, and I just barely caught a glance at this post, so I haven't really read the comments or anything, but it sparked an idea in my brain, and they were talking about how they joined this new horse training group, and one of the things they say in the group is not to talk to your horse. You're using body language, which is really cool. I think everyone should practice that, because you do realize, we're vocal animals, and so you become very dependent on communicating your voice. And if you know horses, you know they're not incredibly vocal. If they talk, it's to call out, but they're they're all about communication through body language. They're masters of it, and so it's good for us to get into the practice of also using body language. And for many years, I told people, don't talk to your horse, don't give vocal cues, yada, yada, yada. You know, use your body and talk to your horse through body language and get really good with that. But I've had a change of heart in the last couple of years, and I realized that vocal cues can be incredibly useful, and especially with my horse Guthrie, who I talk about a time or two. You may know who he is. He's gotten to a point, and I swear he understands. I can tell him, like, you know, I want you to pick up your left foot and put it here. And I want you to pick up your right, you know, right hind foot and put it here. We've gotten to that point. And it's not necessarily because he can understand the words coming out of my mouth. But I think when I talk, my body does certain things and then he reacts to that. But so vocal cues, the reason a lot of trainers and clinicians will tell you in the beginning, don't talk to your horse, is because we tend to overuse these cues and wear them out. So I see it all the time when someone's trying to get their horse to canter on the lunge line. They say, canter, 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 canter. Well, you've just kind of desensitized the horse to that word, and it just becomes meaningless. So you have to be careful, like with any cue, how you use them. For instance, the reiners that I worked with, they have a few, they'll use a few vocal cues. They'll cluck to the horse, kick to the horse to get them to lope. A lot of people will hum to the horse to get them to go from a large fast circle to a small slow, because they have to go from dead gallop to almost Western pleasure lope in about 3 strides. So they'll use that. But the one like set in stone cue that has to be perfect is the word whoa. And I learned the value of not wearing out your vocal cues working in these reining barns. So I see a lot of people, you know, maybe they're saddling their horse up and the horse is kind of antsing around a little bit. And they say, whoa, 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 whoa. They tell their horse whoa for everything. If their horse looks at something, they say whoa. And you can't do that on a reining horse because, you know, that reining horse in that show pen, when they're at a dead gallop and you say, whoa, they have to go to the ground right then, because if the timing gets off, that beautiful sliding stop isn't going to happen correctly. And, so whoa is like, you know, it's almost a sacred term. So they don't throw whoa around just random times. If they say whoa, it's very, very precise. In fact, we got into a habit. If I taught lessons to people and I wanted them to tell their horse whoa, I would say, okay, say that word. I talked in terms of, okay, you're going to say that word when you go down here, because I didn't want to say whoa around their horse too much and wear it out. And so you want to make sure when you're using the vocal cues that you give it some meaning, you know, you use your cue, create the behavior in your horse, release reward for that good behavior. And then you only use that cue when you want that behavior, and you need to make sure that behavior happens. So when you do it that way, words can be very powerful. Talking to your horse can be very powerful. And the guy who put it best, and I've talked about this a few times, I went and rode with Tommy Turvey, who's this phenomenal trick trainer, has done a ton of movie work. And I rode with him a couple years ago, and he said, you know, some people really like to use whips and some don't. Some people like to use treats and some don't. Some people like vocal cues and some don't, and yada, yada, yada. And they all have their reasons. I use everything because, you know, more tools in your tool bag to help you get things done. And so I would say it's good to practice not talking to your horse. And, you know, I think that's a good thing to go through a little bit and really practice getting your body language on point. But don't be dismissive of vocal cues entirely.
Very good. Well, let's do this. Let's take a break while Jennifer gets our guest on. Shauna Koresh is going to be joining us, and she's been coming on our shows for years and years and years, and it's like the two masters of clicker training getting together today, so you have a special treat coming. And then Mary's going to answer some listener questions like she does every month, all coming up on today's show right after this word from Ice Vibe.
In the world of horse racing and elite equestrian sports, it's all about how to prepare and repair. Ice Vibe is a truly portable and highly efficient circulation therapy system for your horse. Before activity, prepare to prevent damage by using the Ice Vibe's vibration pads. Repair after the event by using the unique combination of cold packs and vibration to minimize swelling and encourage blood flow. And because it's battery powered, Ice Vibe is truly portable. The essential and affordable tool to prepare and repair. Ice Vibe.
You can find out more details about Ice Vibe at ice-vibe.com or horseware.com, or ask your local tack shop or online supplier for more information about Ice Vibe circulation therapy from Horseware. Thank you very much to Horseware for their continued support of the Mary Kitzmiller episode every month. We really appreciate them being involved. And of course, you know, if you're needing a new blanket and you're right now in the middle of winter and yours has been destroyed because of the 12 feet of snow and the horses have just ripped holes in them and torn them off each other, then look to Horseware as your choice, found at most major retailers or at horseware.com. Also there. Mary, you started clicker training when?
I started studying it a little over 10 years ago. And I actually have a funny story about that. Shauna's book was the first book I cracked open on clicker training equines. And so I started about 10 years ago. I wouldn't say that I'm a master of it yet. I research the heck out of it. I practice it every day. I love it. I preach its praises to anyone who will listen. But it's one of those things where I always feel like I'm just barely scratching the surface of the possibilities that you can do with it.
Well, and I think that's true of any training technique, right? You never truly master it. There's always something else that can be added to it or that can be learned. Look, I've been doing podcasting for all these years, and we had all kinds of major problems before the show this morning. So.
It was good times. There was a lot of drama. No.
Mary heard Jennifer and I stressing this morning. So, you know, but it does... Because it just does show you that you're always running into new and different things, and you're constantly learning. And that's where I think Shauna is so good, because she's always learning. You know, she'll say that too, that she's learning, and you know, she's constantly taking her craft and making it better. And I really wanted to find clicker sounds for this morning, and I couldn't find any. I couldn't find any clicker sounds on the internet that I could play.
You could probably get a sound.
Do you have a clicker hand by? You could just click occasionally.
Oh, you know, I do, but I'd have to take off my headphones and just... Oh, I do. I have like one 2 feet away, but I'm not going to put you guys through that.
Well, for those that don't know what they sound like, for the two people in the audience that don't know, could you just give us a click or two?
Yes. Hold on one moment. Do you still have your eardrums left?
No, I didn't even hear it. What was it?
Oh, okay. Can you hear now?
Yep, there you go. There's the clicker. And you can get them at most stores, right? I mean, you can find them at your website, too. Didn't you used to sell them?
Yes, mine are the best. Yes, yeah. I still do.
I thought so.
I would say, in my opinion, for horses, the ones that they sell, you can get them at pet stores, because a lot of people clicker train their dogs. If you can find one of the big boxy type clickers, they make a much louder noise. The dog ones I find are a little quiet. They'll still work. But yeah, if you can find a little box clicker, those are my favorite.
Well, your guest is ready.
Okay. So we have Shauna Koresh. Is that the right
you
way
got
to pronounce it?
Yep.
Awesome. From On Target Training. How are you today?
I am fantastic, and it's nice to be back and chatting with you guys.
Hey, Shauna, how are you? It's been a while.
Good. It has been a while.
You're off doing all kinds of clinics. I keep seeing your name pop up on Facebook. Shauna's coming to town for a clinic. Who wants to come?
Yes, it's been very exciting, and I haven't done a U.S. tour in a few years because of one client I've been working with, and I'm starting a U.S. tour, then followed by a European tour. So I'm very excited to be back on the road and seeing everybody.
Terrific. Well, I know Mary's excited to talk to you, so I'll get out of the way. Go ahead, Mary.
Not a problem. And, you know, I don't think we've ever talked in person, but I was saying before we had you on, it's kind of funny. 10 years ago, I worked for a trainer. I won't name any names, but the last person in the world you would think would be into clicker training. But this person had a bookshelf that had books from all sorts of different trainers, or some John Lyons and Pat Parilli and Ray Hunt. And, you know, I was allowed to take the books out and read them. And my very first look into clicker training horses was your book. I think it's You Can Train a Horse to Do Anything, or something along those lines.
That's it. Yep. That's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was the first time, and I cracked it open, and it just seems so foreign to me, like you're using a buoy to get a horse on the trailer. And I, at the time, I was like, well, I can see that that works, but that's just really weird. And, you know, I like the way I'm doing it better, but, you know, things come full circle. And, you know, I started, I started realizing a couple years later that, oh, this clicker training stuff is pretty cool. So you've been doing it for a very long time. How did you come by, getting started clicker training horses?
You know, and that, I mean, it's a great story. So I started with the marine mammals, and that's where I learned to train animals using positive reinforcement. You had no halters, you had no lead ropes, you, everything you, and they got all their food each and every day, regardless of what they did or didn't do. So our job was to make it fun for them and for them to choose to do it. And it was really important that we did that consistently and that they liked it and chose it consistently. So that's how I learned to do things. And then I looked into horses, and it was Elizabeth Bushberg of Anheuser-Busch. She had given some of us trainers, some marine mammal trainers, and we were owned by SeaWorld and Anheuser-Busch at the time. And so we all went and saw this show jumping Grand Prix that she gave us tickets to. And everybody else was like, you know, that's great, I'm going home. And I was kind of like, wait a second. And I was like, I want to do that. And, you know, I didn't even really know what posting was, so I had a long haul ahead of me. But that is where I started then thinking, well, looking into horse training, and realized they didn't use any positive reinforcement. You know, they really didn't know what it was in the horse world. And in fact, I was told horses can't learn like this. And so, I mean, and this was back in the 90s, I guess, early 90s, I kind of started looking into it. And then, so I decided, well, I'm going, and everybody I talked to were kind of Grand Prix show jumpers. And so finally I saw this article in a magazine about a man named Tom Dorrance. And so I didn't know who he was. I know. And I just called him and I said, because I thought he sounds different than what I'm hearing. And so I said, do you think this would work? This is what I do. And he was really excited about it and said, yes, I definitely think it'll work. And he invited me to come to his ranch and work with him to try to implement it. And I, at that time, was still just thinking of going to horses. So I was like, I'm busy, you know, I have a full-time job. Thank you, though. You know, and I said no. And he was very kind. He sent me a signed book and really sweet. And I didn't know who he was, really, you know, because you look back and you thought, wow, that really could have been groundbreaking, but it wasn't. That's not how it went. You know, life has its path anyway. And he did teach me to keep an open mind forever. And then I got hooked up with an Olympic rider, BZ Madden, and her husband, John Men, were very open and forward thinking. And so it was with them I went and started the business. We put it into action, started the whole thing. And then after about a year with them, I thought, this isn't just for Grand Prix show jumping. This is for everything and everybody. And so from there, I ventured out. And nowadays, it is so much more accepted and understood. But back then, everybody was like you. They said, what? You know, what are you doing? But it's all based in science. I think that's really important to keep in mind. It's just taking the science out of textbooks and putting it into practical application. Started with the marine mammal trainers, so I kind of have that advantage.
That's an awesome story. And I love that you brought up Tom Dorrance. I didn't know you had worked with him, which is really cool because, you know, if you look up some really memorable quotes by Tom Dorrance and Ray Hunt and, you know, guys in that ilk, you will find a lot of things, in my opinion, that line up with clicker training. You know, they might not have been positive reinforcement trainers per se. I know they used it, whether or not they realized they were using it. And it's kind of funny because you say that to a group of Ray Hunt, Tom Dorn's followers, and like, no, you know, they didn't do clicker training. And and then you say that to a group of clicker trainers and they're like, no, that's not what we do at all. I'm like, no, you don't. If you like just open your mind a little bit, I think these guys kind of, you know, they might not have understood what it was or even used it to its full capability. But I think that kind of idea was starting, you know, even then. And even when I started, I didn't start nearly as early as you did. I was afraid to show it to people. I didn't want to be secretive. Like I didn't want to be dishonest about what I was doing, but, my first clinic, my first demo, I was sweating bullets because I'm like, oh my gosh, people are going to think I'm crazy. And, you know, after a while, well, and it's funny because the very first demo I did, Guy McLean and King McNabb were there watching me. And I'm just like, oh, geez, oh, geez, oh, geez. And they were really great. They're really nice. But they made, you know, Guy was like, hold on. I got to leave early. I have to go get, you know, the fanny pack from Walmart. And so they made a few very lighthearted jokes. And but then it just kind of became a thing where people were like, hey, can you show us a little bit of this? And then it changed to, can you do a clicker clinic? And I really think, especially now, we're on the verge of a huge, you know, parameter shift in horsemanship. And it's getting to where now more than just kind of your average horse person is wanting to pick it up. I've had reining trainers start asking about it, which to me is amazing. So I really think the atmosphere, I think you're right. The atmosphere has completely changed. And I think it's going to be for the better. And that kind of brings me to, and this is something I've always wondered about personally. Most people start out like me, where you have kind of a traditional horsemanship background, use a lot of negative reinforcement, and you pick up the clicker and you piggyback the clicker onto it. And some people kind of stay in that zone, and some people go on to a more, I wouldn't say purely positive approach, but they kind of go more into that quadrant of training. What are your thoughts about integrating both negative and positive reinforcement, or using kind of a quote unquote traditional program with clicker training? Is it something you approve of, or do you think people should kind of get out of that habit as soon as possible and go more to the positive reinforcement side of things?
I think, Mary, I think this is a great question, because this is a hotbed, because just like you have the natural horsemanshipy people who are like, no, this is all we do. And then you have the clicker training people now that are all like, no, you can't do any pressure at all. You know, so you have these two vacillated, you know, scopes that you can get to. But frankly, I mean, for years, I didn't have anybody who's going, I'm going to abandon everything and go there. You know, you had to work in this kind of let's blend the two together. And I think if people are soft, I think the biggest thing, it can work for sure, because this is how people got started. And it's, there's some people are like, well, horses are only happy if they have 100% choice. And I'm like, so you're telling me there's never been a happy horse in the world for thousands of years until now? You know, it's just not realistic. I think if we're soft, and the biggest thing, if we can recognize something we term threshold. So if we can recognize when a horse's subtlest little thing changes, you know, so you introduce something and the eye goes soft to relax, so just a little bit big and kind of spiked, you know, you can tell they're a little like, what's that? And it's not, the head hasn't flown up, they haven't bolted, they haven't snorted, but it's just that subtle little change. And if you can get that and see that and go, okay, that's actually very loud, clear communication that maybe we're not as comfortable as I would like you to be. If we can recognize that, we can go all sorts of places. So pressure, I always say, isn't the enemy. It's recognizing thresholds. So if we've used pressure as an impetus to teach things, and we're doing it from a fear-based place, because really, ultimately, the reason negative reinforcement works is because it has some aversive quality, even if it's the slightest little bit, you know, so... But if we can keep them under threshold and recognize when they're getting the slightest bit tense and use the positive reinforcement in there, it can definitely work. So, but there's some horses in some situations, I'm like, you have to back, we can't do any of that now. We have to back, they're so flooded and worried about everything that we got to back all the way away. But for a lot of horses, it's an issue. You know, you come up with a, you know, we had one horse named Judgment, and he's a very famous show jumper, and he was not so good with the big waters. So we got him jumping the big waters. That's all. That's the only issue we really had to unpack and redo, you know, because he was happy with the rest of his life. But that one was a worrisome. So I think it really depends on the horse. But if we can recognize when there takes things slow, slow down, you go faster, I would say, I think that it works really good. It can work fine if we're in that really sensitive place. The part that's a little bit worrisome about that, I think through a lot of traditional training methods, we haven't been taught to recognize the slightest shift towards nervousness. So it's, so people go, oh, he's fine. Or I can't tell you how many times I've had people go, he's so good. And I see a completely shut down horse who's into learned helplessness. And yep. I think he's compliant, but I don't think he's a happy horse. So my goal, I came from abuse as a background, and isn't that sweet? But the happy morning topic, what I learned is that I don't want them to be compliant. I really made a vow to myself. I didn't want to be a part of any animal's life unless I felt like I brought something good to it or I could improve their quality of life. So the positive reinforcement training, you totally can feel like you're bringing joy to their life. If they enjoy it, they like it, they choose it, and we can help them to have a good emotional state about the training. So it's never a black and white, and you can do just as much damage by doing positive reinforcement wrong as you can with anything else.
I think, that's a fantastic answer, and I'm really glad to hear that. And, you know, coming with my background with horses, I started, really Western performance and in the NRHA barns and stuff. And you kind of came to get used to and almost demand the learned helplessness. Like, I'm going to put you in whatever situation and you just deal with it. And, you know, you trick yourself into thinking this horse is broke, this horse is quiet, this horse is compliant. And they kind of are all those things in that they do everything I want. And it wasn't till I got out of that and I started messing with my own horses, had a little bit of a crisis of conscience. And then also with the clicker training, you know, really, truly seeing their mind just open and not this kind of, I want to look around at everything and not pay attention to you. It was more of a, like especially the horses I've done obstacle work with, they go into a new arena with new obstacles. And instead of shutting down or spooking, they go, what's that? What's that? And I almost have to, like, I've actually had to go back and work on stimulus control and getting things on cue to where, don't pick up this tarp, don't pull the flowers out of the bridge, you know. And it's a nice problem to have. Like, I can't get my horse to get away from the blue tarp. And when that first started happening, where I saw my horse's eyes just get real sparkly and they got to where they wanted to go in the arena and just look at everything and like pull the signs off the wall and they're eager for food. It, as a horse trainer, it scared the heck out of me. I was like, no, you can't be like that. That's too much personality. Put that back in. And it's almost enough to kind of like make you want to go back to the, I liked you better when you just didn't look at things and you were quiet. But then once you learn to harness that and use it to your advantage, now when I've gone back to these shows I used to go to every week working at these barns, and I look at these horses and yes, they're doing amazing things. They're terribly broke. They're very accomplished. And it's, to me, in some cases, it's almost like a competition of my robot is better than your robot. And I'm still very competition minded. I don't want to like say, well, showing is bad and, you know, performance is bad. But I think I look at the clicker training and I know a few other people are starting to kind of get that way too. And I'm like, this could be awesome. You could clicker train a reining pattern and get your horse, you know, imagine riding your horse around and you're like, man, that spin was amazing. Guess what you get to do now? Let's work on stops. And instead of the horse going, okay, whatever, you know, just give my body back when you're done with it. They're like, yes, I can't wait to do that. And to me, if you can do that, not only does my conscience feel at ease because my horse is enjoying the job, but the performance is going to be better. I think you can not only have a happy horse, but a top performance horse.
I couldn't agree with you more. And because the first place I went to performance, and I love that because I think, you think about with the marine mammals, we taught them to do shows, but we needed to teach them to want to do the shows because they didn't have any ramifications if they didn't want to do it. So we could teach them to love to do this stuff and in a really balanced, happy, mental way. And I think it is the same with the positive reinforcement. And that I always have said, well, if you have a swimmer, a little kid who's a good swimmer, and he's great, he's fantastic, he's super talented, but he doesn't really like it, and he's pushed by his family and his coach and all that. And then you have one who's mediocre but loves it. Who's going to excel? It's the one whose heart is in it. And one of the things that John Madden said, so that's Beezy's husband, the Olympic, show jumper, and one of the first things he said, this teaches heart in a horse. And that's where, you know, you're feeling like he's coming forward. And I always try to point out to people too, as they want to go back. And you make great points in there. And I love your journey because it's one that I've seen people go through. And I think as we start to get them to say, okay, you have a voice, we want you to have a personality, it gets scary because we don't always know we have the tools to rein it in. But with positive reinforcement, you do. You just go, okay, you like the tarp too much. Let's get you standing quietly beside me and liking that just as much, and we can have this balance. But it scares people because they don't know. But as I pointed out, what I like to point out to people is, okay, so what's in it for your horse to do a flying change? Nothing outside of you're going to apply pressure and you'll take the pressure away when he does it right. But when you put something in it that they value, it's a game changer because all of a sudden they're invested in the training and they're like, I want this to go good. I love this training. I get something too. And it changes everything. And what I've also seen is those shut down horses that have been, you know, in the learned helplessness, you know, I'm dealing with one now. And if you put toys in front of them, they don't they don't investigate and play with their world because they're kind of shut down and checked out. And as they start to get bolder and more balanced and happy, you see them interacting nicer with the other horses. They're not as aggressive or checked out. You see them playing with stuff, healthily investigating things, and everything changes and they look forward to the training. And one of the things in that very first week, I went with John and Beezy just to see if us humans could work it out. And so all I did was the prep work. I did the bridge conditioning and target training, which, you know, teaching the clicker, teaching the target, which is going to sound alien to people who don't know. But all I did was that little prep work. It was 3 5-minute sessions a day in their stall. It's really simple. They love it. It's when the lights start to come on, when they're like, I love this part. At the end of the week, Beezy said, so my training never left the stall and it never involved Beezy. Her training, it was, you know, separate, never involved me. The two training we were doing, we watched each other, but they didn't overlap. But yet she said at the end of the week, she said, those 8 horses you're working are remarkably better in the arena. And the training didn't directly overlap, but it changed their mental state. And I think that's really big, but it's getting people to trust that and see that is starting to come to light, like you said.
That's one of the craziest effects I've seen of it. And someone told me something similar when I first got into it. Because one of the first questions I had was, okay, I'm a trainer. Some horses are only going to be with me 30 days. Some horses, you know, not every horse I have is a lifetime horse that I'm going to keep forever and keep in a vacuum. And, you know, they're going to be, you know, people are going to speak different languages to them. And that's just the reality of life. So I wanted to know, okay, If you send me a horse for training and I teach it some clicker stuff and I send it home, do I have to give the owner like a bag of food and a clicker and be like, this is the only way your horse will do anything for you? Because I know that not everybody's going to be on board for that. And I spoke with the scout. I spoke with the scout who'd been in a very well-known natural horsemanship program and just kind of decided to transition over to clicker training. And she said, you know, a lot of people, they know, you know, that I have good reputation. I get results. They don't really want to know what I'm doing. They don't ask a lot about clicker training. I don't even tell some people anymore. And she said, I do it. I've never had one complaint about the horse going home and unlearning anything. She said she had one horse in for just 2 weeks. And she said, this particular horse was very, challenging to get just to target. Like it took the full 2 weeks just to get it to target. And she said, that's all I did. And the horse went home and they were like, great, thanks. He's doing wonderful. And, you know, and I've seen, and that's kind of an extreme case. But I've seen that over and over again, especially, the cool thing about clicker training is everyone thinks it's one method. Like, you know, if you go to you and then you come to me, we're going to take the exact same things. It's just like natural horsemanship or you know, Western training. Everyone's going to have a different approach. But a lot of people share kind of the same ideas for getting started. And a lot of people, you know, we pretty much understand you don't condition your bridge signal and then immediately go into tempi lead changes at Liberty. You have a bit of a foundation and then you know, everyone kind of has different ways of going after that. But even if you just did things like, you know, you taught them what the click means, you get them to target. I like to teach targeting as one of my first things as well. And I do things like teaching them to stand on a mark, working on food manners, but all the behaviors are very quiet. They're very stationary. You wouldn't think you're working on things like lead changes, but I found that if you get those really good, and I didn't want to do this in the beginning because I wanted to do the fun stuff right away, but if you get those really good and you can't do them enough, you would be surprised at how much your lead changes get better. Your horse gets better on the trail. He seems less spooky in the arena. And it's almost magical how that works.
It is 100% like that. And when I watch people start their little clicker journey, in the back of my head, I'm just like giggling because I know what they, and I'm so excited for them because I know what lies ahead. But you're right. The foundation work, I cannot stress it enough. People want to jump ahead. And a lot of times what happens with that foundation work, we're also working on relaxation, but a good alert relaxation. So I think it's really important that we get those things very clear, because if we go right from, you know, day two, we launch into the trailer that they hate, you know, or whatever, it becomes attention related to it. And we always say, no, no, you love this game and do the little things. And that's why I say, slow down, you go faster. I'm like, I know it seems tedious at first. Just slow down, do it. I guarantee you will have better results. And, you know, and kind of speaking to what you're talking about the people going home, you know, with their, you know, what? How do you do it? I'm going to send them home. How do we do it? I try to teach everything on traditional training cues. So I use positive reinforcement to get it. So it's not pressure as the impetus for the behavior to happen, but it is positive reinforcement and I shape it, but I use the cues and use the positive reinforcement. So I may use a target to lead them into this or get them to go forward or whatever it might be. So the end result can feel the same and look the same, but the bottom line, if they're doing any behavior, everything they do basically is a choice and they're going to outside of reflexive behavior, meaning something like, you know, a box falls on them and they jump. That really wasn't a choice. That was reflexive. But mostly everything they do, and even after what they do after the box falls on them, is now their choice. But everything they do is a choice. And they're going to choose the thing with the strongest, the best outcome for them. So as we take something like, you know, let's say it's lead changes, we take something like that, and we build a good, strong, positive reinforcement history with it. Then they're like, well, why wouldn't I do it? I love, you know, lead changes. And that's all there is to it, you know, because we built this good, strong reinforcement history. So it doesn't necessarily have to be backed up all the time with food. If they've just learned it and they like it and they do it, if there's a problem, you might need to go back. But by and large, I find like people can ride and handle my horses without any problem. People who have never fed them and aren't going to feed them. So they just, I guess it depends on the horse a little bit. If you've had an issue, maybe they'll need a little bit of a manual to sort something out. But usually if that's the case, they come to you and they're ready to break it down and figure it out because it's a challenging spot for them. But it's really, really good points you make, all of them. It's nice to chat with you because you're so experienced with it. But it is the principles are the same. So behind it all. And I think this is one of the problems that some of the early clicker training people, particularly people that were coming from the dogs. So they would look at the book. And they get rather mechanical about their clicker trainings. They go, this is what you do. And it would be without emotion in a way, or without a recognition of the horse's emotion. It would be a means to an end. And I think that what's really important in there is they're all individuals who come with their own history and their own things. And we need to take those principles, but be ready to adapt them to a different situation, to different horses. So underlying it's the same, but we may take little different tactics to get there. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
And I'm going to interrupt you guys because we're going to run out of time. And I want to make sure that we at least get one listener question in here. I'm going to make Shauna work. You guys have been just having too much fun geeking out. Now it's time to go to work. All right. So Kelly asked, how can I use clicker training? I think this is good. This is a good question, period, because everybody deals with this if you've had horses for any period of time. How can I use clicker training to help a very herd-bound horse? So far, the only answers I'm getting are tie him to a tree and let him scream it out. And everybody, if you've owned horses for any period of time, you've owned a herd-bound horse, right?
Yes.
So there's
okay.
The question.
So it's and that is a good question because people kind of think it's for this or that, but it's for anything. Okay, so as I break it down, I start realizing, so if happy part.
Uh-oh. She's breaking up on us. You're breaking up on us.
Perfect timing.
Yes, right when we were about to get the answer, she breaks up on us. Try that again, Shauna.
Are you there?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's try it again.
So basically, with a herd-bound horse, if you think about it, whether it's the one staying or the one going, because it can be both sides of that equation, it just means they're more comfortable, they're happier when the other horse is there. So I start breaking it down thinking, well, I want to make your experience being further away be a good one, one that you like and one that you look forward to. Or if it's the other side of the coin, when that horse goes away, your experience is good and better. But this is where we talked about earlier, the thresholds and recognizing when the horse gets worried. And if they go too far over threshold, they're not learning anymore. They're in fight or flight. They're panicky. It's not a learning experience. It can slip into something called flooding, where now they're just panicking and they don't know how to control and get their friend back. And they keep trying and trying and trying. They don't know what to do and they can keep panicky. So that's not a learning experience. That just continues to make it will sensitize them as opposed to desensitize them, or it can send them into the learned helplessness where they finally realize they have no control. So what I try to do is recognize, where is that threshold? Can I take you 5 feet away and you're okay? Some horses, maybe it's 40 feet away and you're okay. But I want to go to just that point where I feel like they start to go, wait a second, we're a little bit far, but they're still with me. And I want to work at that point, go, okay, can we do, and like Mary and I said, we want to make sure we have that foundation good. So I go, okay, so we're here, let's do some of the things we like. Can you target? That's great. You click and reinforce them for paying attention, for doing good things. I make it quick, short, easy. And I recognize that one of my biggest reinforcers in that situation is getting them back to that herd, to that member, to that barn, whatever it is that they are so vital to them. So I say, if you can be with me for a short little bit, I'm going to make it hugely reinforcing on the food side, the positive reinforcement side. And in addition, then we're going to go back to your friend from a quiet place. So we just start to build on that. And pretty soon they're like, yeah, whatever. They will just start to walk away and want to go do the new thing. I also try to recognize if there's an added stressor in there. So maybe we're taking them away, we take them to the arena, and then we work very hard. So in addition to thinking, well, all the fun stuff happened with my friends, it's not just the separation. Sometimes it might be the work at hand, and they're thinking, I would just rather go back to that safety of my group. So I try to evaluate that and keep that as in my scope of evaluating their comfort level. But you just start little, keep them in their comfort zone, and slowly stretch that. And the next thing you know, it's pretty quick. They start going, we don't care. I'm good. What friend? So it's not that hard. It's just paying attention to the individual and going at their pace, not our own pace.
And one more. Thank you for that, Shauna. And I don't know who wrote this one. What's the difference between clicker and marker training, and is food critical?
Ooh, good one.
Okay. So yes, a clicker is a marker. It's just different names. Clicker training, frankly, with the marine mammals, we never called it clicker training. That is a dog training term. And I don't, frankly, like it because it starts making you think about the clicker when really it's such a big picture. So a clicker is a bridge signal, meaning it marks a moment in time. So marker training, bridge training, clicker training would all be the same thing. It's making a conditioned reinforcer, making some way to tell them that was the event I like. So that's really important when you're doing things like a flying lead change. And you need to say the second you feel that hind end shift over, go, that's what I like. You can't feed at that moment in time, but you can click, you can bridge, you can use a whistle, whatever it is you want to do. And then they go, that just earned me a reward. So that's really important because it's very precise. But the food, the reason we use food is because it is one of the things, it's a primary reinforcer. They need it, they like it, they want it, they need it to survive. So its value is really, really powerful. Because if you think about it, because they need it to survive, they're hardwired to look for food all the time. And horses are even better than the marine mammals who get satiated. Horses graze all the time. So it is because they're hardwired for it. Think about a baby. I mean, a baby horse is born and within an hour it's up and it's feeding, it's finding food without anyone having to teach it. It just knows. So because of that, its value as a motivator is actually unrivaled by anything we currently have in our training system. So, but the trick is, how do we turn it into something valuable? So as much as we may perceive they like this, they like that, the values can change. So what they like at one moment may not be the same. Food is going to be one of the strongest motivators you have. So I like to go there. And when you have a horse who's also shut down, or a feral horse or something, you need something to kind of break through that and get their attention a little bit. So I definitely think food is going to be, I do use other reinforcers besides food, but I use food a lot, and I use it to start, and then I begin to fade the food as the behavior gets strong. So we don't always have to stay reliant on it with a behavior, but I do think it is really important in order to give that really high value to the training and that commitment we're looking for.
Very good. Well, Shauna, we run out of time. Where can people find you? I know that we have a lot more questions we didn't get to, and I'm sorry about that for the listeners. And a couple of them said they have their videos, and they have your videos, and they love them. And I know you have a tour schedule. So where can all that be found?
Well, now, instead of going to connection training, I mean, on-target training, I've actually shifted over to connection training. So connection training is an online, we do online study courses, but it's going to now become a central location for me. So connectiontraining.com is a great place to go. And if you get confused, you can always look up Shauna Animal Trainer and you will find me.
That's right. I mean, you just basically look up Shauna or Clicker and put them together and you're going to find her. It comes up. You've been doing this long enough. You pretty much are at the top of the Google rankings for that. Well, Shauna, thank you so much. It's been so good to talk to you again.
Glenn, it's been really nice talking to you again. And Mary, it's been delightful. I really enjoyed it. And I hope you have me on again soon.
I would love to. It was great.
All right. Thanks, Mary, for setting that up. And thank you, Shauna.
All right.
Well, Mary, now you're not done yet. We have a couple of questions from the listeners that you have to answer. So let me give you the hard one first.
Okay.
Because I like torturing you. Chantel said, groundwork exercises for when there is 4 feet of snow on the ground. Yeah, good luck with that, Chantel. Move to Florida.
I do not envy you. Well, actually, I have run into this problem myself, and it actually sort of forced me to dive deeper into clicker training because a couple years ago when I got Guthrie from the sixes, I didn't have a covered pen, and my footing is, it's a little bit of sandy loam, but it's the kind of footing on my place to where if it gets a little wet, you are skiing, not safe. Like, I didn't feel like I could get my horses out of a walk, and the nearest indoor arena is an hour away. And it's just, you know, so I'm stuck with this unbroke horse and a schedule. I have a deadline. It's a year, but that's still pretty, you know, coming up quick. What do I do? And so I found, you know, it forced me to use my imagination. I found there's a million things you can do. I think we're very, as a whole, a lot of us in the industry are very limited in our interpretation of groundwork. There's so much you can do. You wouldn't believe, but we kind of get stuck on like lunging, getting our horse ready to ride, and think that it has to be a lot of walk, trot, canter, and changing directions and everything. So clicker training tends to lend itself to, like I said earlier, a lot of the foundation stuff is very stationary, very quiet. You could do it in a stall. You can do it standing in 4 feet of snow. but it doesn't, you don't necessarily have to use the clicker to get this done. And so, I actually have a video. It's my most popular video I've ever posted. And I did this because we really wanted to film something cool. It was too muddy to do anything. I'm in my muck boots in the video. And so I thought, let's film some stuff to do when it's too muddy. And you can find it on my Facebook page with a little searching. But some of the examples that I use are, I taught my horse food manners. Again, that's kind of a clicker training thing, but you don't have to be a clicker trainer. That's a good habit for your horse to do. So, you know, I stood next to him and rewarded him for, you know, not mugging me. I worked on my ground tie. So worked on getting my horse to where I could put him in a spot, say, whoa, walk around him and he doesn't move. So that's a good one. I worked on getting him to line up to a mounting block. And mounting block work, again, it's something we tend to be very limited when we think about. I used to think, well, that's just for people who are too short to get on their horses or whatever. Definitely, there's a lot of value in mounting block work. You teach your horse, you have to have very good body control to get your horse to line up just right. And then you have to have, you know, really good communication with your horse, especially if you have a horse that likes to line up to the mounting block and then you go to put your foot in the stirrup and they move away. So that's a little thing you can work through. It teaches your horse to, you know, be calm, relaxed. So that's very valuable. I worked on a lot of backing exercises because it's slow, thoughtful work. I taught my horse to come when I call him, which is very important. And I do that, you know, keeping him at a walk. You can work on teaching your horse to lower his head, work on picking up his feet, work on, can I get you to step your hip over one step? Now move your shoulder over one step. You can work on, I'll hook a set of reins to my halter, or you could put a bridle on and work on getting your horse to accept a soft feel in the bridle. So you can stand next to him and pick up on the reins and find out, you know, exactly how much feel you need to have to get your horse to soften in the bridle. So there's a million and one things to do if the weather is preventing you from either moving around too much, or if there's 4 feet of snow outside and you can only work in your barn or your stall. And these things I used to kind of think, well, my horse is pretty good for the farrier and this isn't going to help me with my spins or whatever. It really does. The more precision you have controlling your horse's feet, where they put their feet, the better they're going to be when you do get to ride them again. And the weather sort of forces you to work on stationary, relaxed behaviors. And if you can get your horse to do those things and be happy about it and relaxed, then when you go to ride, you'll find a lot of other issues are starting to dissipate. Their spookiness, if you have a horse that's kind of hot, wants to rush forward, that tends to get a lot better. So with a little thinking, you can do a lot, even if the weather prevents you from it.
Oh, Mary, hold on. We have breaking news.
Breaking news, live from the side of the 18th hole at the Masters. Just kidding. good morning, you guys.
Jamie Jennings, what's your breaking news out there in Phoenix, Arizona?
Well, you called me, so I don't have massive breaking news. However, it is exciting. So I slept in the barn last night, and not one... Well, like one teenager was going to sleep on the barn with me. And then she told the other girl that rides at our house. And then she told the other girl. So I had a pile of teenage girls sleeping in a hay stall last night. And we did the milk test strips. It was 95%. She's going to have the baby in the next 12 hours. Well, ooh. Son of a nutcracker. Nothing has happened. Nothing. That was over 12 hours ago. Nothing happened all night. So I get these little, you know, what's up and out for school. They got to go get out. I come back over here. She's dripping milk.
Ooh.
I got to tell you, when I told Mary about your whole story before the show, she said, this is her first one, isn't it?
Mary, I did not worry this much when I had a baby inside me. Yes, well, this is my first. And only.
Oh, that's awesome. Yes, I did have to laugh a little bit because the first barn I worked at, we fold out like 15 to 20 mares a year. And the first one, I was just like you are now. Like, you know, I had full watch and I'd look at her and she'd lay down. Oh my gosh, she's looking at her belly. What's she going to do? And she's dripping milk. And I watched all the videos and they said that it's going to happen now. And then, you know, the baby came and it was a miracle. And I had to pick the most special name in the whole world. And we got to imprint it. Well, by baby 20, it was like, have it already right now. Okay, you know, or, you know, you kind of look at him, you're like, you're not going to go for another month, are you? And then when it comes to naming, he's like, your name is number 12. Yeah. That's the best I can do for you right now. I remember.
That's what the thoroughbred breeding farms do. They name them, like the mom's name, like Zenyatta 16. 2016. So, but here's the deal. So, you know, I picked this mare. I picked this stallion. I ordered semen and picked it up at UPS and carried it to the mare, introduced the mare to a box of semen. I have been through every heat cycle with this mare. I have prepared her. I was there when she was inseminated. I was there when she was pregnancy checked. I was there when she was checked every 2 months or so after. I've been here for the entire damn thing, and I will see this thing through, Mary Kitzmiller. I will not miss this baby being born. This is my dream horse that I have created out of thin air, and I will not miss it. So the fact that she's leaking milk now and she wanted all these damn kids to get out of the barn, I think that's what she's telling me. And my vet said, don't turn her out. Don't let her out. She did say that she might have a day full. I've got a great line of text from the vet for you, Glenn. But she did say, don't let her out. She don't want her to full in the field. I said, is this normal? Like, she's doing this, and this. She goes, yes, this is all normal. They usually do this for 3 days. The owners get tired, go to bed, wake up with a baby.
Yeah. But I just looked at the baby cam, and she looks pretty content standing there right now. So,
sun's coming up. She's getting warm sleeping.
Yep.
Yeah, I know.
I would definitely, keep on keeping on, because they are sneaky little boogers. And, well, a day full would be nice, wouldn't it?
Well, yes, it really would. And I do not appreciate her making me sit up all night in 46 degrees. I mean, granted, 46 degrees sounds amazing to most.
I think she called you and said, please come out and watch me all night. I don't think she did that, actually.
I milked her, Glenn, and her milk test strip said she would have the baby within 12 hours.
Does she have any, like, waxing on her bag or anything?
She was waxing like crazy. She still got waxed.
This is her fifth one, though, Mary. She knows how to take her time. She's got this. She's just doing this to mess with Jamie at this point. She's just going, here, I'm going to teach this woman a lesson.
She's pawing right now. She's pawing. She's looking at her belly. She's stretching, she's leaking milk. What more do you guys want? Huh? Her vulva is relaxed. Her hindquarters have softened. Her milk is leaking. She had wax. Everything is telling me she's going to have this baby, and by God, I'm not leaving this barn.
Tell her to hold out for my birthday.
Yeah, that's in 2 days. I don't When's think Jamie wants to hold out that long.
It's 2 whole days
I'll
away.
I'll kill you. I'll kill you.
Then you name it after me.
All right, Jamie, thank you for the update. We'll look forward to tomorrow morning getting another update. It'll be the same. I'm sitting by the stall. She's still waxing.
No.
She's still leaking.
If she hasn't had this damn baby, I'm not embarrassing myself and coming on the show tomorrow. You can just forget about it. Try somebody else. If there's no baby, why would I torture myself like that? All right.
See you, Jamie. Good luck.
You guys suck it. Bye.
She has been fretting about this for weeks.
And I would too, you know, I act all crass like, oh, I've seen all these babies born. It's not a big deal. But if I had gone through all that and I'm making my own baby and I'm, you know, I would definitely be
a
basket.
I don't tell her I said this, but we were the same way when we had our first couple.
Oh, yeah.
So we were the same way. But I have
it's
to bust her chops
it's yours.
About it. And you do think for about 6 weeks that the baby's going to come out any minute. And they just keep you waiting. And of course, I think one of them we were out there for, and the other one snuck up on us and did it overnight. So, you know, and of course, we weren't there at the moment it had it, that one. All right. One more question, Mary. And this is from Anne, and I'm giving you the toughest one last. And Anne, I'll give you the same answer I gave the previous one. What's a good way to condition a horse when not riding? Well, I think there needs to be more to that question. When not riding because there's 3 feet of snow outside, you know, or too cold to ride or whatever that is. So I think there's probably more to that question.
Yeah, different circumstances are going to change what you do. You know, maybe you're not riding because the horse has a lameness issue. So obviously, you may still need to work with the horse to keep him engaged, but you can't do this and this and this. So if it's not the weather and we're just going to assume it's the weather.
Yeah. I think that's a safe bet right now.
Yeah. There's a couple of groundwork exercises I like to do that are very low energy. You can do this in the snow. You do need a little room to do it. I will send the horse around me at a walk. So this isn't quite lunging. It's a very small circle. They're very close. And I really focus on asking the horse to bend in that circle. It's one of those things where they kind of find a natural bend as you do this exercise. You don't have to do anything particularly special. I just ask them to keep their nose tipped toward me, ask them to really stretch out in that walk. And then, a couple of circles around, I'll lift my lead rope kind of up toward the horse's withers and ask him to, and I'll walk toward their hindquarters and ask them to soften and yield those hindquarters. I want them to find cadence in that yield. I don't want them to scooch around. I don't want them to be pokey. I just want a nice cadenced yield. And all the while being soft to that halter or bridle. And then I switch hands and I ask the horse to bring their shoulder through and move their shoulder to go the other direction. And then I'll start by asking him to go around the other way. And the cool thing about this exercise is, like I said, you don't have to put on any special equipment or do anything super special to get the horse to soften. They just kind of naturally soften over time. They naturally drop their pole, stretch that top line, give you a nice inside bend. You don't really have to do a whole lot of stuff. It's just kind of one of those exercises that over time they just get really soft and light. So that's something that's, it's good. It's low energy. It's concentrated work. You will help keep them conditioned. It's kind of hard to keep a horse conditioned if you're not able to send them out at a trot, or a canter. But there are things you can do. You can flex them in the bridle, ask them to, give a little bit each way laterally, ask them to give vertically. Backing up, I found, is really good. You don't want to overdo, but you can back a horse and ask them to be really soft in that backup. It's something that'll build muscle. It's not, it's very slow. They're less likely to slip around in the mud. And not just straight lines. You can back corners, circles. That's really good for a horse. And it really gets them thinking. They have to move their hindquarters. They have to move their shoulders. They have to stay soft. So those are the types of things that, that I like to do to help keep them, conditioned. There's certain types of lateral work you can do. You can teach your horse to bring their haunches in. You could teach them to do a little shoulder in from the ground. Again, these are all at the walk. They're soft, easy, low energy.
And I did check, and she is from near Albany, New York. So our assumption probably was correct.
I'm probably going to say it's weather. Yeah.
There we go.
12 feet of snow. Well,
hey, I have some pointers too.
Yes.
Me. You didn't see the me.
Yeah.
Me, did
no,
you?
I didn't. I'm sorry. I was looking where this was London. In New York. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, having spent a little time in Massachusetts in rain and snow central, believe it or not, riding in the snow is fabulous. If you're walking, put appropriate hoof gear on your horse so he doesn't get snowballs and hurt himself. But walking through deep, fluffy snow, good workout. Go for a 10-minute walk.
Yeah.
That's like putting weights on your feet and marching with your knees really high. So that's a great one. Making use of your lateral work, like you said, having the horse doing all sorts of different lateral work. It's kind of like yoga for your horse. Great stuff. Ground poles. If you have any type of indoor anything, even up and down the aisleway, if you have an aisleway that is safe to walk in, mounted or unmounted, why not put the ground poles in the aisleway? Hello. You can make the ground poles a little shorter than your horse's natural stride to encourage him to shorten, make them a little longer to encourage him to lengthen, or make them random to encourage him to think and use his core, because by continuously changing the length of his step, he is going to have to use his core muscles, just like you would if you were walking in soft, dry beach sand. So those are three things that I have used in the past that keep the horse moving around, keep him supple, and help him use his brain a little bit.
Good ones. I like those.
There we go. All right. Very good. Well, thank you, Mary.
No, I'm not going back. No.
Where can people find you?
I am on Facebook under Mary Kitzmiller Horsemanship or my website, MaryKitzmiller.com. Getting ready to update. I've got a few new events coming in the spring and summer, so I'm very excited about those. So stay tuned. I'll be posting those shortly.
Sounds good. Well, thanks a bunch, Mary. Of course, Mary is here the second Thursday of every month, and you can go to horsesinthemorning.com to find all, just search for Mary Kitzmiller. You'll find all of her past episodes, and you'll see them right there. It's simple and easy. You can go back and take a listen, to all the past ones. They apply, you know, the training tips apply this year or last year or 2 years ago. Doesn't matter. So take a look at those. We're thankful to horseware.com for continuing their support of Mary's episode every month. You can find all of their products at horseware.com. We'll be back tomorrow. Don't forget, it's a really bad ads day, so get your ads in to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. Get on Craigslist. All you snowbound people have plenty of time to get on Craigslist and just search for really bad ads. We have some great prizes this month, and we'll do another batch tomorrow. Hopefully, Jamie will be here. If there's a baby, I don't know. I'm expecting her to call in sick because she'll just won't. You know, once the baby comes out, she's not going to want to leave the baby either because she'll be convinced that it'll just break itself. So we have that coming for the next couple of weeks, too. Because that's what happens when you have your first baby.
Yes, I'm all excited about it. I'm gonna keep an eye.
Keep updated. There'll be pictures. I guarantee you, there'll be 1,000 pictures.
Like one or two. Yeah.
So that's it. Thanks a bunch, everybody. Thank you, Mary.
Thanks.